This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I am going to come in for a little bit because I have a lunch with a friend tomorrow. But I think I'm done for the week. So it's been a good week. I'm finally getting out of the end of my cold. That makes it an even better week. And I actually didn't climb out of that until really today. I've still just got a little stuff I'm dealing with. But you know, all in all, I've been clearer and brighter minded today than I have been in about a week and a half. So it is a good day. I am off the drugs. It is raining, in case you can hear that. It's just been gorgeous couple of days around here, and we need the rain, and rain is always nice, so makes the roads a little slick. I'll try to be careful. This week I had another topic in queue. Actually, it was the same topic I had in queue last week, and something else bumped it out. Excuse me. Still got a little stuff in the throat. It is episode 29, I think. I'm pretty sure it's episode 29. Yeah, it is episode 29, I think. Anyways, this week I did have another topic in queue that I was ramping up to do. But in the process of getting ready for that, I actually came across an article in the National Review, I think it was, in the National Review. I read this article and something just went, ping, there's a topic for you. And honestly, I didn't know what the topic was. All I knew is there was a topic in there. The article was written from a conservative standpoint, and it was dealing with the whole furor over Roman Polanski. You may not have been following this. Roman Polanski is a fairly famous director. He's had some important films that have been done, and from what I understand, he's had some not-so-important films that have been done. Well, many years ago, he, and I actually looked this up because I didn't want to just, go off the top of my head here, but this was in 1977, and there was an incident, we'll just say for now, because we'll get back into it later. There was an incident with a 13-year-old girl, where he had sexual relations with a 13-year-old girl. He subsequently pled guilty to a lesser charge. He then fled the country. I believe he's been living in France. They were having a big film festival in Switzerland. I think. He had gone over there to that. He was immediately arrested, and so I don't know if he's been extradited yet, but they're working on that. Well, a lot of the very famous people in Hollywood and in the entertainment industry just thought that this was terrible and egregious that this man would be arrested because he's a great artist. And the article I was reading was comparing and contrasting this and sort of giving reactions and stuff. And I thought, okay, because I had this ping, there's a topic there. I thought, okay, there's a topic there. What is the topic? Because there are plenty of people that are going to talk about, how dare those, entertainment people just say that this is no big deal. And then there are other people that say, this guy needs to be strung up by his heels and blah, 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 blah. And all those things. But I didn't feel like that's really what I wanted to talk about. I mean, honestly, in terms of judgmentalism, in terms of enforcing the law, some of that, for me, is a little bit of mind candy, because there's not really anything I could do about that. If I was a DA and I was called on to enforce the law, maybe I'd have an opinion about it on the cases that I'm working on. But in this case, I'm completely disconnected from any legal proceedings for this, and so I could, pontificate about it, but really, what would be the point? That's what we were talking about last week. What's the point? I subsequently started talking with my friends that I get together with, and said, you know, I got pinged on this, that this is a topic, but I'm not really sure what the topic is. And we talked about a lot of things, and nothing really gelled. Then yesterday, I was talking with a friend, and he said, well, it kind of sounds like that David Letterman thing. And I had tangentially paid attention to the David Letterman thing. Apparently, David Letterman had intercourse with some of his staff members, and there was this same type of interplay between one camp that was saying, oh, look, hey, it's no big deal, you got to understand, this stuff happens, and another camp that was saying, what do you mean it's a big deal, no big deal, there must have been sexual harassment involved, and other, you know, all these opinions, which, again, I could pontificate about, but I really don't have any opinion on, because what would be the point of me pontificating about that? And then, in addition to that this week, I was chatting with some friends, and they were in the middle of a somewhat awkward situation, because they knew a couple who was engaged, who had announced to them that they were pregnant, even though they weren't married. And we had that big, long discussion. And so I kind of had all those things rolling around in my head. And then this same buddy that had said, oh, it sounds like the David Letterman thing, sent me an email this morning. And he said, have you seen this article? And so I pulled up the article, and it was on David Letterman about the people who are coming to his defense, people like Barbara Walters. I just blanked on her name for a minute. Barbara Walters and Martha Stewart, very powerful women in the entertainment and news industry, coming to his defense. And I was reading through this article going, yeah, 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 got it, I understand. And then I came to the quote by Martha Stewart. And she was talking about the fact that this kind of stuff goes on. And she got all the way down to the end of the quote, and the article quoted her as saying, but you know, men are men. And at that point, my little register went off, and it was ding, 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 ding. Okay, there's your topic. But you know, men are men. Because I addressed this situation in Still Whispers, but frankly, I knew at the time I was writing Still Whispers what a good portion of the reaction to Still Whispers would be for the people who have actually tried to read the book. And in fact, I knew enough of what the reaction would be that I put right at the beginning, I don't know what's brought you to this book, but now that you have begun, don't stop. Because I knew that this was a book that was specifically determined to shine a light on the activities of the flesh, specifically determined to help us as individuals quiet the atmosphere of our life so that we can better hear the Spirit of God. And I knew that the flesh in my readers would not like that. So I knew it was going to come up with all kinds of excuses for them to put the book down. And I'm always amused when I get the following type of reaction to the book. People start reading it, and they start saying, wow, yeah, I'm really enjoying the book. It's really good. And then a couple of days later, I won't hear anything. And so I'll let a few days go by, and they'll say, so, how's Still Whispers? Oh, you know, I was reading the book, and there was so much information there that, you know, it just got to the place where I was just kind of overloaded with information, and I thought, I just need to set this down and just kind of try to assimilate what's being said here and then kind of get back with it. And typically, those people never pick up the book again. Which, in my interpretation, it's not that they didn't like the book, because they are quite effusive about the fact they like the book, they like the way it's written, but they're always a little bit distracted away from that. I had made it a point not to discuss the topics in the book in Still Whispers, simply because it's available on my website. You can go and you can download it for free. As long as you don't try to sell it, it's done under what's called a Creative Commons license. However, this particular topic, but you know, men are men, I actually deal with this in Still Whispers. Because if you have read Still Whispers, and specifically you read the chapter Small Tools and Flowers, which I will basically talk about today and use these examples, and specifically if you read the next chapter, which is Controlling the Count, which we will not talk about today because I don't know that there's any way that I can talk about that and still keep this G-rated. Not that it's bad, it's just earthy. And even this talk might not quite be G-rated. It might be more like PG because it's going to be a little bit earthy. I know enough people have maybe gotten started with the book and not finished that in this particular instance, but you know, men are men, I thought, okay, yeah, we're talking about this today. Because when you look at the Roman Polanski situation, when you look at the David Letterman situation, when you look at the situation that my friends encountered this week with the engaged couple who is now pregnant, it really all comes back to one thing. And that's a very simple principle. Now, before I get to that principle, I should read you a quote from Roman Polanski. Because after he had fled the country, a couple of years after he had fled the country, he gave an interview because this issue apparently was still very much in the forefront of the news, and he gave what is described in one article that I found as a profanity-filled 1979 interview, and he described why he didn't think this was such a big deal that he had had sexual intercourse with a 13-year-old girl, and again, details will follow. I want to give you plenty of opportunity that if you think, okay, I don't want to hear about this, you can just shut it off. Shut the podcast off. So anyways, Roman Polanski gave an interview in 1979, and this is how he described the fact that it was no big deal. He said, if I had killed somebody, it wouldn't have been so much appeal to the press, you see, but, in quotes, having sex, which I'm assuming that's not the word he used, having sex, but having sex, you see, and the young girls. Judges want to have sex with young girls. Juries want to have sex with young girls. Everyone wants to have sex with young girls. I'm sorry, no, I don't. And there's a reason I don't. Because I consider myself to be a man with a capital M. And this type of behavior I consider to come from men with small M's. And the reason is that the root of all of this behavior, the root of the David Letterman behavior, the root of the problem with the couple who was engaged and is now pregnant, is there is a deep belief that has been planted in their minds, in their hearts, by the flesh, and it is a core belief that the flesh will attempt to peddle to every man on planet Earth who calls himself a heterosexual. And that belief is very simple. It's this, and this is where we get into the PG rating. Women exist so that I can have a tool to help me control my sperm count. Now, the base belief that is through all of this behavior is that women exist to help me control my sperm count. And the flesh plants that belief in every man's heart. Now, who has heterosexual inclinations? I mean, that's, there is a basic drive in men to desire to be with women, but then on top of that basic desire, the flesh plants a belief that that's what women are for, when in fact, that is not what women are for. God has created male and female as a beautiful example of the relationship that He desires with us. He did not make women just so men could have tools to control their sperm count. Lest you think that Roman Polanski did not believe this 13-year-old girl was simply a tool for him, let me just quickly rehearse the circumstances around this incident, because the original article that I was reading did say, you know, if all you hear is Roman Polanski had sexual intercourse with a 13-year-old girl, you might think it was one of those situations where the girl was there, she said she was in 10th grade, but she was really in 7th grade, and he didn't find out about it till later. Apparently, the people who are defending Roman Polanski really either don't know all the details surrounding the situation, or perhaps think that just because he's a great artist, it doesn't matter. I mean, the article I was reading actually quoted Whoopi Goldberg as saying, well, you understand that it wasn't really rape. And the guy who wrote the article said, well, let's review here. What we have is Roman Polanski, who takes a 13-year-old model back to Jack Nicholson's house, telling her that he wants to shoot pictures for the European version of Vogue of her, apparently to get her undressed. He takes the pictures, then he gives her champagne and I think a Quaalude to kind of settle her down and sedate her. Then, okay, and this is getting to be the PG-13 part. Well, worse than PG-13. He has oral and anal sex with her multiple times while she's saying, no, I don't want to do this. And the guy in the article said, well, honestly, that's not really even my definition of rape or rape. He said, that's my definition of rape. Which I think the guy has a point. But what's the belief underneath it that drives that? Roman Polanski believes this young lady was simply a tool. And when he says that everyone wants to have sex with young girls, what he's done is basically saying that women are just tools, and all men that are out there just want to use them as tools. I mean, the same principles easily can be applied to David Letterman. You know, here he has a girlfriend, apparently at the time. I think he's been with her for a while. He did apologize to her, so I'm assuming that. And he has these younger women on his staff. And for whatever reason, he ends up using them. Now, if he really cared about them as people and desired to create an environment of sex, an environment of sex for them, which is what he created, if he really cared for them and wanted to create an environment of success for them, he wouldn't be having sex with them. But instead, he just wanted to use them as a tool. And with regards to this engaged couple, this is where it starts to get sad. Because if the man in that relationship really treasured this woman he was engaged to, Why would he simply use her to satisfy his own pleasure? And on the flip side, how sad is it that the woman on the other side of this engagement actually believed that the way I can ensure that he'll love me is if I have sex with him. The way I can ensure that he'll love me is if I allow him to use me as a tool. Before we actually have a covenant relationship. Now, I'm sure the flesh told them, well, you're engaged, you know, it won't be very long before you're actually married. It's sort of like you're married now, so who cares? But the fact is, they, as a Christian couple, will carry this the rest of their lives. Because then the flesh will turn around and beat them up over it. And instill guilt right down into the base of the relationship, and it won't be good. In addition to the fact that now they are going to be raising a child immediately after they get married, which will put a whole other series of stressors on the relationship. So because of all that, there is really no environment of success. I'm on my driveway now. There's no environment of success that is created by creating an environment of sex. As long as I'm having trouble getting the words untangled, I might as well use both environments. All you end up doing is propagating a belief in your mind as a man that a woman's purpose is to be a tool. Now then, does that mean that we as men do not have a God-given appreciation for the female form? Of course not. We as men will never get away from that. It's built in, it's instinctual, God designed it that way. We are visually stimulated. However, we can take responsibility for this. I'm getting my mail. And I actually had a little incident that illustrated this when my wife and I were away on our wedding anniversary. We had gone to City Museum up in St. Louis just for a visit. We'd never been there before. We didn't take any kids with us, which that would have just made it better. But we didn't take any kids with us. It was just us. And we were just kicking around. We had a wonderful, wonderful time. City Museum, the best I can describe it, is a place in St. Louis where a bunch of artists got together to create a playground out of recycled materials from all over the city, and somehow they convinced OSHA to never send an inspector. Because this is not like Disney World, where everything's real careful, and you want to make sure, I'm backing into my garage, you want to make sure that nobody gets hurt, you know, yada, yada, yada. For some reason, hey, there's my garage door. For some reason, it was not starting up, and it's starting to rain harder, so I will talk a little louder. So there's all this exposed rebar and all this kind of stuff, but it's a very, very cool place. Well, outside, they have all this huge metal structure that has stairways built into it and passageways built into it, and it's very, very cool. I mean, it's just very, very cool. And I had crawled around on some of it, and my wife had thought that I was going to crawl through some tubes and things, and so she said, okay, I'll just stay down here. You go up and crawl around. Have fun. I said, okay. So I took off, and as I started working my way up, this young couple came by. And the boyfriend was saying, okay, well, do you want to go up? And she was like, I don't know if I want to go up. And I looked at her. I said, you know, it helps to realize that once you get above 35 feet, it's really not going to make any difference in the world. I mean, you won't even bounce above 35 feet. It'll just poof, done. You're dead. So, you know, you can really relax once you get above 35 feet. And I looked over and we were pretty close to that. Anyways, this young couple, they also had a friend along, you know, very lovely young woman. And so I didn't think much else of it. I'm climbing around. They have these big planes that are welded into this whole gridwork of metal. I'm climbing around. I get into this one plane and I look to my right. And this very lovely young woman is in the process of crawling out of the plane. And so her posterior is facing me. And I think to myself, you know what? I'm not going to sit here and stare at that because it was quite lovely. But that woman is more than that. And she does not exist simply for me to think about what it would be like for me to use her as a tool. And my standard way of responding to the flesh trying to convince me to do that is if I ever happen to see a very attractive young woman and the flesh is down there going, I've found that the best way to make the flesh be quiet is to start praying. Specifically, start praying for the young lady that the flesh would like to for me to conceptualize of a tool. And so I start praying, God, I thank you that you have placed such beauty in the world. I have no idea who this young lady is, but I would just ask that you will bless her today in whatever epics and quests that she is pursuing in her life. God, I ask that you will help her. If she does not know you, I ask that your Holy Spirit will draw her to yourself so that someday she can know you. If she is engaged or she is dating or she is married, whatever her situation is, I just pray that she would be able to deal in that situation in honesty and in love and in honor so that she would not be objectified. That she would not be dehumanized. Just pray that everyone that comes into her path will treat her with the respect and the kindness and the generosity that every human needs and deserves in this life. And what's amazing is that if you pray that kind of prayer and you get in the habit of dealing with it that way, as opposed to just going with your flesh every time it starts going, ho, 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 that you actually can get to the point where you'll knock down that noise. And then, especially if you will implement the suggestions that I make in the next chapter in Still Whispers, Controlling the Count, it really, really does help. And I'm honored to say that when I interact with women, I am able to look them in the eye, smile, care about them as individuals, realize that they are God's great gift to the world, and realize that they have plans and hopes and aspirations just like everyone else, every other man. And I have derived a great deal of joy from the close relationships that I maintain with a lot of women because I don't conceptualize of them as tools. I conceptualize of them as human beings. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.